We go out now to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Tom DeAngelo, our friend from the Palm Beach Post who covers the Miami Hurricanes. Tom, right out of the gate, do you think that does it make sense to you that Miami is favored by 5.5 points at Virginia Tech on Saturday?
I was surprised when I saw that. You know, is Virginia Tech that bad? And I haven't seen them in the last 3 weeks.
They're pretty bad, they're pretty bad. But Miami's so bad that to me, I feel like whoever's the home team should be favored in that matchup.
I would think in this game, yes. When I expected Virginia, I thought Virginia Tech would be like a 3.5 point favorite. When I looked at it, I think Sunday night when it came out, and I was like, I think at that point it was 3.5. I haven't seen it since. It's gone up to 5.5.
Yeah. 5.5.
Jeez. I don't think many people are watching Miami the last month.
they're just thinking about, like, the last game they watched was like the FIU game. Like, oh, yeah, this team's great.
It is amazing to think that these two teams are combined, have lost 7 games in a row combined. In this game that everybody expected in, you know, September to be the game that would decide the, you know, ACC Coastal, the winner would be going to the, you know, going to the ACC championship game. It's really been a strange year.
Yeah, it has. You're right, because I think on just about every media member's ballot, it was 1 and 2 in the Coastal, Miami and then Virginia Tech, or Virginia Tech and Miami. It's very weird to see the Pitt Panthers being now the team to beat. Tom DeAngelo from the Palm Beach Post joins us here on WQAM. So, Tom, sticking with Nakosi Perry as the starting quarterback this weekend, right call?
Oh, yes. It's time to get a gauge as much as you can for the rest of the year on just what Nakosi is. It was encouraging, but I'll tell you what, and I'm going to say this, it was definitely a step forward, and it was encouraging the way he played, but man, is the standard so low that the quarterback who throws for 165 yards is being celebrated this week? Because, you know, if this were any other year, any other time, you know, Nikosi's game at Georgia Tech would be looked at as, it would not be, certainly not be kind of celebrated the way it's been, because it has been so bad, that position for Miami this year, that any hope, you know, a guy who comes out of there without throwing an interception, completing some, you know, more than 50% of his passes, he had 2 very good drives in the entire game, but it was a step forward. But that's kind of just shows you, you know, how what a difficult year it has been at that position.
So, and honestly, how much better do you think that he would be playing, and even Malik Rozier would be playing, if the offensive line had at least really been serviceable for the last month?
That's a huge part of it. We don't know that, Donald, but that is a huge part of it. And we see this all the time in football. I mean, the problems this year, to me, start with the offensive line. There have been quarterback issues. I understand that. But they started their 5th different combination against Georgia Tech, which, you know, just shows you that as much uncertainty as in their minds for the quarterback position, it's the same thing for the offensive line. And you know, looking forward, where people say, what are they going to do with quarterback next year? Is one of the two guys, whether it's Nakosi or Jaron Williams, or they bring in Kelly Bryant, is somebody going to be serviceable? I think you got to, as importantly, is who's going to be in the offensive line? Are they going to have an offensive line? Because, you know, I know they lose a few guys. They have 2 or 3 seniors, but there hasn't been any indication, like a quarterback, that there's anybody who's ready to step in and help that unit improve, and that's huge. Those two positions, man. You talk about the two spots, the two most important spots on offense. They're 1 and 1A. I know quarterback is, everybody looks at it as 1, but offensive line, you've got to have an offensive line to make an offense work, and that has been as much of an issue this year as the quarterback position.
Now, at quarterback, I've got to ask you, because you brought up a name that's become very polarizing now among this fan base. And, and Kelly Bryant, you know, he's going to take a visit. He's going to visit Miami on the day of the Pitt game. He's going to be here making his official visit. There's a graduate transfer from Clemson, a guy who obviously had been a part of a very successful team, and he's not a great quarterback. If he was an elite quarterback, wouldn't have been benched in the first place. But Kelly Bryant is probably right now better than anything else you've got on that roster. I look at this, Tom, and I say, if he does decide to transfer to Miami, I say, great. You're giving yourself an option. Even if he doesn't win that starting job next year, he adds depth to that position, and he probably would win that starting job and maybe keep that seat warm for Jaren Williams to take over in the long term. I just think there's so much fear among Canes fans, Tom, because I hear people say, oh, well, this is terrible because if he comes, Nakosi Perry probably transfers, and maybe Jaren Williams thinks about transferring, and you're stunting your long-term growth. I think people are overthinking this, Tom. Like, I can remember when, 15 years ago when Brock Berlin transferred to the U, I'd say that worked out pretty well. I was a little bit afraid of that when he came in because Miami had a young quarterback named Mark Gillen at the time who went to the same high school as Ken Dorsey. I was worried, oh, they're going to stunt Mark Gillen's growth. He ended up transferring. You never hear from the guy again anyway. I think people are overthinking this when they're afraid of Kelly Bryant transferring to the U.
Well, I understand the fears because if you do lose one or both, but both especially, where are you in 2020? Number one, is Kelly Bryant going to mean, what is that going to mean next year? You're not going to have an offensive line like we spoke about. You're going to lose more than half your defense. I see this program. I don't know what the win loss is going to be, but I don't think they're going to be as good a team next year. I think next year there is a step back before you start moving forward and getting some young guys going because you just look at it. I mean, I don't know how anybody can think they'd be a better team. They're going to lose most of the defense and they don't have an offensive line. They don't have a quarterback. So if Kelly Bryant comes and you solve that quarterback position, but what is that going to get you? Now, if he comes in and you lose a quarterback or two, where are you in 2020? And here's where I would have said, bring him in. If you had a stud coming in this year, mm-hmm. and you could say that he could learn a year behind Kelly Bryant, and you were confident that that guy could be your quarterback after sitting out a year and just learning the system, okay. But they don't have one quarterback in this class. And there's no, and they're not going to find one now because there's nobody else.
Yeah. I think they've already given up for this one. Yeah,
47 of the top 50 quarterbacks have committed in 247's rankings. So what does that leave you? If they both transferred, it's a disaster because you have nothing. You have Cade Weldon would be the only other scholarship quarterback on scholarship.
Okay, that is kind of frightening.
I mean, that's the real possibility if he comes in. And even if one of them transfers, what do you have the next year? You bring in a quarterback for 2020, you'd absolutely have to. And I'll tell you what, nothing gives me confidence that they're going to bring in a stud because we've given this, even for 3 years, what do we have? It has been, amazingly, the one area which I have said where Mark Richt deserves criticism is the quarterback position has been mismanaged. And if you look at it and you believe that they're going to bring in a star next year and you get that guy can play in 2020, okay, go ahead. Bring in Kelly Bryant for the bridge. But I don't see it. I don't see that guy coming to the University of Miami. And the other thing is, if they are bringing him in, and if they've gone to the point where he's coming in for a visit, what does that tell you about their faith in the other two guys?
Yeah, exactly. It tells me that they're certainly not that hopeful.
Not sure.
Unless, I mean, to me, it probably says more about their faith in Nakosi Perry because I would still like to think that they're confident that Jaren Williams would live with the idea of not starting next year. He would still have 3 more years of eligibility after that. But to me, like it obviously says a lot about their lack of faith in Nakosi Perry.
I just think it's a really sticky situation with if he comes in and we've said all this. I don't believe that. I think it'll be tough to get him. I think, and I'm with you on that. Yeah, I think especially where at Arkansas, everybody believes Arkansas is the leader in the clubhouse for him. But Chad Morris is the head coach there. Chad Morris recruited him out of high school and also, you know, coached him. He was an offensive coordinator at Clemson. So that's number one. It's going to be difficult to get him to come here. But boy, they've laid their cards out on the table. We kind of know what they think of these two guys right now. If they're that willing to bring him in and pursue him, you know, contact him, now bring him in for a visit. We kind of know what they think of these two guys, and they really don't have, right now, it doesn't appear that they have confidence that either one of these two guys can be a guy that leads you to any kind of success next year.
We're joined here by Tom DeAngelo, covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post. Tom, what do you think? You know, obviously there's a lot of outrage by the fan base towards, you know, the coaching staff, mm-hmm. to the play calling, to, you know, to some of the decisions being made, to the fact that, you know, the quarterback's coach happens to be the son of the head coach, and you see the way the quarterbacks are performing. Now, I am not a fire-ricked guy, nor do I think there's any reasonable chance that would happen this offseason. But what do you think the end game is going to be heading into next year? Do you think we might see a new play caller next year? Do you think we might see a new quarterback's coach, a new offensive line coach? What kind of changes do you think are reasonable to expect for that staff, if any?
I think he has to do something. He has to shake it up. There has to be some changes. I don't think he's going to give up play calling. I think that, you know, it maybe new. My thought is, if I had to pick one, it might be Thomas Brown might go, and he might bring in a new offensive coordinator that at least can give him some, bring in someone else with other ideas. You know, the offensive coordinator doesn't call the plays, we know that, but still, the offensive coordinator has a heavy hand in the offense.
Yeah,
and the type of offense they run. So, you know, bringing someone else with different ideas as far as John Rick, that's, it's going to be a very difficult situation for him. I did a story a couple of weeks ago. I talked to Bobby Bowden about the most difficult time of his coaching career was when Jeff Bowden was on his staff, and then Jeff Bowden started taking all the heat.
Yep.
And basically, Jeff Bowden, after they lost to Wake Forest at home 30-0, he walked into his father's home, his mom and dad's home, and he resigned. And Bobby still, against his wishes, he did not want him to do it. He finally said, I have to, you know, I've got to go. It's killing you. And so, you know, John Rick's 20. It's a little different situation.
Yeah, it is. But I read that story you wrote, and it was very powerful. Yeah. And I think that you're right. The situations at this moment aren't exactly alike, but
no, because,
you know, a couple years down the road, it could become that.
Yes, but, you know, in another reason, you know, and that's part of it, is they look at the John Rick's limited experience. He's coached basically 2 years, and one was as a, you know, both of them were kind of like consultants. They weren't really coached before he came to the University of Miami. So, you know, one year under his dad. In fact, he wasn't even paid because he couldn't be paid because of nepotism laws when he was at Georgia for the 1 year under his dad, and then 1 year at the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, could it be they find someone does Mark a favor and gives John a job in the area, the Dolphins, a consultant, you know, maybe what, like what he had with the Bills. You know, hey, could you help him out and put him on your offensive staff? FAU, FIU, I'm just throwing out names. Mm-hmm. These are the programs where you could still stay close to the family, because we know this was as much a family decision as it was a football decision. It's very close-knit family, and they really enjoy being around each other. I don't think John would want to leave, but if it meant, you know, having to work somewhere and he had to, I would guess that would change things, but or even keep him on staff in some other way. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I'll tell you what, it's going to fire his son. John Wick's going to have a job somewhere next year, whether it's at UM or somewhere else, probably in the area, in football. But I think there will be, you know, as far as Searles, I don't know. I don't know anything about the dynamic between that, you know, he and Mark, and just exactly, you know, how much he will take the heat for the play of the offensive line or for the recruiting, or, you know, my first year on this beat, I'm not sure even if he, you know, how much recruiting he's going to be as offensive lineman. But I do think there's going to be some moves on the offensive staff, And my guess would be maybe the coordinator, probably the coordinator would be the first one if something had to go, if something had to give there.
Great stuff here as always from Tom DeAngelo. Final thing though, Tom, your prediction, does Miami at any point within these next two games, are they going to be bowl eligible?
Yeah, I think they will. Actually,
all right.
You know, I could see them actually. Believe it or not, I could see them winning both games because just the way Virginia Tech played. Now, Virginia Tech saying the same thing about Miami. Well, we're one of the team. They've lost three in a row. We can win this game.
Yeah.
Virginia Tech saying, oh, they've lost four in a row. We're at home. We got to win this game.
Yeah.
So you have two teams that are reeling in, but they're not that far off. You know, there's not. That's not like Miami's going in this. And the disadvantage talent-wise. So if they put it together and they're able to not allow Virginia Tech to get on a roll and get out fast, start like you did last week against Georgia Tech, and get your quick point, but then, you know, get your touchdown, get your early lead, take the crowd out of the game, and maybe you can kind of demoralize them. Pittsburgh, believe it or not, Pittsburgh may have clinched the Coastal. They will if they win this week. Do they play Wake?
I think they already clinched. Actually, is that right, Biff?
Well, could Virginia have they clinched? They may have clinched the Coastal. Yeah. Last week when Miami, I just looked at the Miami situation. I didn't go through everybody else, but they probably have. So being at home, being the last game for the seniors, there's just going to be a lot of emotion in that game. Sure, they could win both games. I think for sure they're in the bowl. I mean, I would be very surprised if they don't win one. But I would say, they have a chance to win two. Now, will that matter? Seven wins, six wins? What bowl they go to?
Well, it means in about a month I'll see you in Shreveport.
Yeah, it's a cluster of bowls. Shreveport, Annapolis, Detroit. Even El Paso would be in that mix. Probably, maybe not. They're in the first tier, but it's going to be one of those three or four bowls. So it won't matter much. But there's a big difference, though, because then if you go into a bowl game and you lose, you can't get under. If you win a bowl game 6-6, now you could finish your season 6-7. There's a big difference between 6-7 and 7-6. So, yeah. I think it would be important to win those last two, go into a bowl, on a little bit of a roll. And, hey, maybe they could reverse what they did last year, win the last three instead of lose the last three.
I like that. Focusing on the positive, Tom DeAngelo covers the Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post. Follow him on Twitter at TomDeAngelo44. So Miami's going to go 8-5 is what Tom is guaranteeing. Thank you,
so
Tom.
They would finish 8-5. I'll be 11. Well, it depends what, you know. Yeah, it's possible because those lower bowls, you're not getting the cream of the crop of your opponent either. that's the advantage. That's the one thing about going into those, the type of bowl they're going into. They're going to play a very beatable team, not a team that's made a Power Six, not a Wisconsin or somebody else that's a really good team. So you have a chance to win it. Now, what does it mean? Not a whole lot, but it gives you a little feel good coming off the year as opposed to kind of last year when you a 10-0 start was a little bit, felt a little. You didn't feel as great about it after the season ended.
Well, enjoy Blacksburg, and then I'll see you in Detroit or Shreveport in a month.
I'm actually we are pulling in an audible this week, and I'm going to the biggest game in the state.
Which
would
is?
That be? You tell me. Where's the biggest college football game in the state this weekend? It's a no-brainer.
Is it? I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Game day, ABC.
I didn't realize that was a home game for UCF. My bad.
Yeah.
UCF hosting Cincinnati, biggest game in the history of the state of Florida.
Biggest game in the state this week. Biggest game
ever.
Biggest game in the state this year.
Love it.
I'll go as far as that. I don't know if there's been another big one. But the way the Florida State, Miami have played, I can't imagine none of them have played a big game. This is the biggest game in the state this year. This is Central Florida's. This is their chance to back up all that talk to the nation. Their chance to crow on game day for 3 hours Saturday morning, and then and they're a pretty good favorite. They said they win that game, and you're one more win away, and then oh boy, if Central Florida goes 12-0 and they don't get in the playoff, which they won't.
I can't wait. Yeah, and I can't wait for that to happen, by the way.
That is going to be – that's the reason I'm rooting for them not to lose is because I just want to hear it. I want to – it'll just – to sit back and watch, what happens if they go 12-0 and finish like 10th in the college football rankings.
And don't forget, they do have Bennigan's in Orlando, so you should hit that up.
That's right, they do. And the I'm drawing a blank. Monte Cristo at the Monte
Cristo. The Monte Cristo. You either stop by there or Medieval Times or something before the game.
So I'll be going to Orlando this week, and then I'll see you back at Hard Rock Stadium next weekend.
Love it. Tom DeAngelo, thank you so much, my friend. Enjoy your night.
Okay. Thanks, Donald.
Great job. He covers the Miami Hurricanes for the Palm Beach Post, although he's cheating on Miami, and he's covering UCF this weekend. How dare he?